Hello and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the hard rock, litigious, grumpy world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and with me as always is Ben. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Mac.
So we are recording this on May 1st, May Day. You may hear some protesting going on outside the window. I'm not sure exactly why they're protesting in my suburb and not somewhere where it might actually be noticed by someone, but, hey, good job getting and doing something at the very least.
I mean, it happens, and it's true. And at least, I mean, I haven't, you know, looked up how it is in Seattle today, but usually, historically, we have some fun times on May Day.
Yeah, there's been some windows smashed, a couple people pepper sprayed in the face. That's how it was. I mean, it's here in Chicago. I guess if they're going to march around here, that's probably better than everyone going downtown and marching around there. So yeah, more responsible.
The real question I have is, like, can you maintain a safe space from each other?
I went out and looked at the people marching on my street, and they were doing, I think, their best to kind of keep distance from each other, which had sort of a weird... You know, it's tough because you also want it to look, when you're doing a protest, you want it to look like there's a lot of people there. So when everybody spreads out like that, it kind of does make it look a little more meager. But it was definitely, it was maybe like 40, 50 people, which it's not nothing. It's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's no inaugural crowd, right?
Yeah.
I just wanted to take a shot.
We weren't sure initially was just looking because for an excuse. There are also people out near the beach protesting because they want to reopen the beach because the weather has been kind of nice for the past couple of days.
Yeah, same here. Yeah. I mean, I don't know about the beach protests. I know that, the Capitol had protests over, I think, being able to take boats out and go fishing.
Yeah.
And I do think that that's actually getting eased, which, is probably good.
People
I think it's fine if people are out in their boats, but, it's the part of the, yeah. Anyway.
Whatever. Listen, stay inside, stay safe. If you have to go out and protest, please do everything you can.
Yeah. Wear a mask, maintain distance as best you can.
You can't smash the state with a broken hand, so, stay safe out there. All right, so this episode, we're taking a look at Season 10, Episode 3, Columbo and the Murder of a Rock Star. This episode stars Dabney Coleman as a high-powered lawyer who murders his lover, a former pop star, when he discovers that she's been cheating on him. Coleman previously appeared without a signature mustache as Detective Murray in the Martin Landau episode Double Shock. Do you remember that?
Oh, way back.
Yeah, way back. Coleman was the actor of choice for 1980s films, looking for a jerky yet somehow charismatic antagonist. Appearing once again as Coleman's blackmailing legal associate is Shira Denise, Peter Falk's real-life wife. And also, we have Columboy's favorite John Finnegan appearing once again as the police chief.
A lot of character actors in this episode. Honestly,
this episode also features Sandra Curry, who played the very helpful police sergeant who follows Columbo around for most of the episode. She can be seen more recently as Zach Galifianakis' mother in the Hangover films. And she's also the real-life sister of Runaways singer Sherry Curry.
Wow. Yeah. That's what a small world. Yeah. Do you happen to know what else she did kind of in this era of the 90s?
I didn't
think to look her up. I just had this IMDb moment right where here. I was like...
I actually have her IMDb open, so let me take
it. Yeah, I had a moment where it struck me. I was like, this, for some reason, makes me think of things like Hill Street Blues.
I mean, she just looks had this a vibe lot like... what's her name? The lady who has perfect recall of her life. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Mary Lou Henner.
Vaguely.
She looks like Mary Lou Henner.
Yes.
But she's not.
She does. I know she's not. She appeared in
an episode of Cheers. She was on Murder, She Wrote. She was on a couple episodes of Simon and Simon, Golden Girls. She was on the RoboCop TV series. She played an alien named Terry Cloth on the Alien Nation Dark, that thing. Remember that thing?
The movie or the TV series?
I think it was a TV movie after the TV series went off the air.
Okay, sure. Yeah. No, I remember Alien Nation and sort of the,
God, that's,
the swings
that was something.
That took. I mean, yeah.
We don't have time. That's a whole separate podcast.
That's its own thing.
That I will not.
But yeah, no. She had that weird vague. I think it's the Golden Girls is probably where I.
Yeah. I mean, she really does look a lot like, I literally just blanked on Mary Lou Henner. Yeah.
Mary Lou Henner.
She does quite a bit. But yeah, she's been in a bunch of stuff, still working.
Mary Lou Henner was great in Noises Off. In fact, that whole cast is incredible. That filmed version of Noises Off is really.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's
not particularly germane to this particular discussion, but good to know.
I mean, you mentioned her.
Okay.
I get that it's a non sequitur, but I mean, you know what show we're making.
I understand. So this episode of Columbo is okay. This is an okay episode of Columbo.
I mean, quick global overview.
Yeah.
Was there anything particular that made you just go, nah, I don't like this? Like,
that
relegates
know.
It to just it's, okay? It's, or is it just you don't like it as much as last
I mean, episode? I don't like it as much as last week, but I just generally, it's very blah. Like, I just, like, don't, Dabney Coleman, as fun as it is to see Dabney Coleman, who, of course, was in War Games and 9 to 5 and a ton of other stuff, is this sort of very dad energy, even when he's not playing a dad, mustachioed guy.
Yeah, that stern, disappointed dad is a good descriptor.
But
for sure,
he's just not. There isn't a lot of like dynamism in this episode, and there isn't a lot of like interesting stuff going on. There are some scenes that I enjoy. I really love the very crazy, like. I like Shira Denise in this, you know, I think she's actually really good in this episode. I think everybody's good.
It doesn't click for you.
I feel like it's the total is less than the sum of its parts, you know?
I know what you mean. I mean, you mentioned kind of the gist of it. I don't think we have to go through the entire plot. I mean, the short version is exactly as you say. It's like he
hires a private detective who finds out that his
installs a camera in the vent in the bedroom of the beach house. Right.
Beach
basically
house.
It
finds
is,
out that
it is that
his living
Marcy,
girlfriend, who's Marcy. Mm-hmm. Yes. This former
Marcy Edwards, former pop star who has shitloads of gold records on the walls, by the way.
If she's like, a former pop star, I don't know why she needs this guy. She must have made, maybe she had bad representation. Maybe it was one of those like Hammer things or something. But
that's highly likely.
I feel like she would be very rich if she has this much. I mean, residuals.
Yeah.
But
you're right. This is an era where it's like, hey, listen, even if she didn't even make money on the actual albums, which I know, let's not get into like the nitty gritty of how artists would often get screwed by, you know, those big companies. But outside of that, like, she would have been able to do commercials and really rake in some cash. Cause I mean,
At the very
pop stars
least,
in this era were doing fuck loads of commercials for Coke and other,
I mean, at the very least,
know,
she'd have
products.
Her touring money or something. But anyway, the exact financial details that have led to her taking up with this, extremely, taciturn and listen, say what you want about Dabney Coleman. I would say intensely sexual is not something the energy that he has ever given off.
No, but I mean, it's pretty clear that that's not, as you say, that's kind of not what she's there for. She's there for like the good life.
I mean, I guess I don't know why she needs him? High powered lawyer is more rich than an extremely successful pop star.
Well, she's
a rock star,
you know.
Why they call her a rock star. She's definitely not a rock star.
No, it's definitely pop. I mean, the thing that we didn't mention yet, which I feel is critical knowledge for anyone who is stepping into this episode, is that the opening scene where we watch Marcy making out with God, what is his name? We don't find that out until later, but
his name is Nettie Malcolm.
Yeah, but Nettie Malcolm, who we learn later was her drummer from back when she was a pop star.
Nettie Malcolm rock star. From
Australia. I don't know.
Maybe the worst accent ever. He is a repulsive man, and I hate seeing him on screen.
they make him pretty greasy and awful.
Yeah, he's a handsome guy, and somehow they make him he's more despicable than Dabney Coleman in this film somehow.
Yeah, he should and he's got a bad rap sheet too that they mention later, right, which is part of why Coleman tries to set him up. Right. But because it's physical assault and battery on women, attempted rape. It's bad.
He's bad.
It's real bad. And I look at it and I'm just like, why would you?
Yeah.
I
had a thought, in the scene where, listen, we don't condone murder on this episode, but this is a fictional thing. And honestly, when Dabney came in to kill them after they were pretending to enjoy caviar and have this sexy, I was like, God, I'm so glad I don't have to look at these two people pretend to be sexually interested in each other anymore. It's just, so fair. Repulsive. And to that be the, that certainly didn't help me as far as setting the tone for this episode.
But that's where you were. And in my mind, I couldn't get over the fact of they are fucking to her music. That's not weird. You don't find that weird at all? And it's and then later when you find out, oh, he was her drummer, it's like, okay, so they're fucking to a track they made over a decade ago.
I think that's just what musicians do. I think every musician has sex to their own music. I think that's very normal. That's definitely true for some musicians. I would bet Kenny G has gotten down to some Kenny G music.
Right, but I mean,
I'm not saying it's a universal thing, but I'm saying there's definitely some.
It's still one of those things that I found jarring because it was wouldn't that take you out of the moment? Anytime I've made a thing and then I'm forced to consume the creative work that I have made, I am uncomfortable.
I only put this podcast on when I get down. But don't worry, Ben. I just put my audio track on. I don't put your audio track. So
great. I totally believe that. this hasn't made this uncomfortable.
So the whole idea,
he hires a PI, then he destroys the evidence, and he changes the locks on her. Fine. That's fine. Mm-hmm. That should be okay.
Destroying the evidence
screams of premeditation, but at the same time and it's obviously premeditated because he goes through an elaborate process of syringe poison.
So he actually starts, he formulates this plan to kill her because she plans to blackmail him. She plans to lie. It's not a lie.
What she says to him is basically boy, it sure would suck if people kind of found out how many people you bribed and blah, you basically what a crooked son of a bitch you are.
But I think she's also saying I could literally say anything and they would believe me. So it doesn't even matter. I think she's saying it doesn't even matter if it's true. That's fair.
Yeah. There is that component where she's weaponizing her fame or her former fame.
And I think that must be the reason, the plot reason why she's a rock star.
No, I agree. I think that's a good point you made. And there is definitely that component. But that is certainly the marker where he was it's murder in time.
he threatened her first. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And so it's they're both monsters. Yeah. He is the bigger monster for sure.
Why? Because he's a murderer. It's very judgy of you, Benjamin.
Well, so and here's and 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 as we learn more about him pretty rapidly in the episode, because they don't fully just lay out everything about him up front. Like, we get the, like, oh, there's this huge building and he's really got a lot of money tied up in it. And then she mentions that he's this hotshot lawyer. And then
that does not come back even slightly.
No, it's literally just an excuse for him to be, to threaten to push her off a construction building, and for him to say, all my money's tied up in this, I can't give you half of what I made in the 4 years we've been living together.
Yeah.
And all that aside, like, the rapid drops that we get about him is, it's not just he's a powerful, high profile lawyer, he is a defense lawyer. He is the most successful defense lawyer for murderers.
He's never lost a case, he says. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Columbo mentions that he is a forensics expert. He has all of this expertise in forensics and clearly these other things. And it is, here is, I think I'm going to pull at the thread of, like, the sum being less than, you know, all the parts.
Sure.
Is that the issue here is, you know, the issue is that, like, this, there's nothing wrong with this episode. Let me just say that up front. This is a totally acceptable cromulent episode for 90s or for throwback Columbo. Like, this is a good solid episode.
Yes.
What is lacking is what we can sense in the potential of what this episode should be, because this is literally the character that should be the toughest foil for Columbo.
Right.
And but he's not. And we get basically a single incident towards the end that suggests the level of sort of pressure and influence that this guy can exert over Columbo.
Yeah.
Like, there's earlier stuff about, like, the chief going, look, he's important, you're going to go have dinner with him at this fancy place and you're going to give him all the case files.
Yeah.
But he also says, also, it's not on our dime. They make the best steak. And then Columbo, sure enough, it's my favorite part of that scene, just continues to order food at this fancy restaurant. How many courses?
There's good little bitlets. Yeah. I really like that scene. It sort of harkens back to the murder with the trading murders episode where the police captain is, whoever that guy was.
Do a murder for me and I'll do a murder for you.
Yeah. And then, but it's very similar to that, where you've got someone sort of inside the investigation. There's a great little bit where, when he, quote, first sees the body, because he's obviously saw the body when he made it into a dead body. But when he first is in the morgue identifying the body, he does like a quick sort of forensic examination.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that just sort of falls to the side. After, you know, they have Columbo bring him these autopsy reports and he doesn't do anything with them. That's the thing that I agree. It's sort of frustrating
he does use it. It's just that it's not, like, none of the motion, like I said, none of it is, like, out of place, and it lines up if you're examining it. But it's not, it doesn't get us to the point of really feeling like he and Columbo are having a tussle. You know what I mean? Like, there are some subtle points where, like, it's kind of an amazing scene where, like, Columbo catches him and then he's like, no, get in my car, we'll drive and talk. And he drives him to the county jail because he's meeting, you know, a client who is in jail for crimes. And while he's driving his convertible Mercedes with Columbo, he is the most reckless fucking driver I have ever seen.
Yeah, it's very good fake bad driving.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great and it's a great scene for sort of establishing character notes about how kind of brazen this guy is. But anyway, that aside, when they are in the county jail, one of the things he says to Columbo is, like, this place is full of, you know, little mistakes. It's this great line that isn't really a throwaway, but it is just about the idea of, like, all these people made some fucking mistake, and you know, they made some little mistake in their whole thing, and that's why they're here. And he means it in the like they slipped up, and Columbo obviously means it in like, yeah, a little mistake, like I know you fucking made one, yeah, because I'm on to you. And that's cool, but it doesn't, the thing is like, it's just not, it doesn't have the sort of energy and oomph that, yeah, I want it to have when you're talking about a guy whose whole career is about getting people off of murder charges.
Well, there's a couple and scenes that have like motion and energy to them.
Yeah, and the DA scene towards the end is one of the strongest,
yeah,
I will say. But my point is
okay,
they right should, well, it's just that they feel like they should be stronger in this episode than they are. And that's what I think makes this episode feel lacking.
I just think like, I just don't think that, I think Dabney was the wrong guy for this one. Because I just think he's too...
He's not Robert Culp.
He's not Robert Culp, but I don't need...
And I know you want him to be.
No, I don't need a Robert Culp. I just need someone who's going to... I need someone who's going to meet Columbo with energy that... I don't know. This does not feel like Dabney brought his A game to this. I feel like he is really giving this like a half motion run. Like this feels like a run through for me. I don't know. I just am not feeling his energy. He's not giving me anything in the scenes that he's in. He's just kind of there. He's saying his lines, and he's not doing a lot. And
I don't know how much of that is on him and how much of that is on how the director handles folks. When I say that, there are some actors where you'll see them in hot garbage. And you're just like, oh, that person can't act for shit. And then you'll see them in something else and they're like, you know, Oscar quality. And it's down to, they literally need a director who understands how to talk to humans. And I don't know if that's what's up here or not. I can't definitively say, and I think you might be right that Dabney is just kind of, you know, half-heartedly, you know, putting in time on some of this because... Yeah. Most of the other performances are pretty solid.
I think it might be that because the character is meant to be like frustrated and sort of half paying attention to Columbo the entire time. Like he's sort of using as a distraction technique or as his technique to sort of throw Columbo off is acting like he's not really paying attention. You know,
right,
a lot of the time. And I think that just leads to it feeling like he's not invested in the scene that he's in.
And no, I agree. It definitely sort of takes the legs out of what should be a more tense exchange between the two, or at least more tense for the audience than it feels.
Right. Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of tension on that front. That crops up basically when he plays his sort of, you know, his sort of ace in the hole in the DA's office with his amazing colleague from Idaho who is going to be his representative, who is like, how cowboy can we make him?
There's a lot of very strange, like, peripheral character decisions in this movie. We've got the cowboy hat guy. We've also got the detective who he's hired, the private detective, is for no apparent reason is just a Sam Spade. He's literally a Sam Spade.
He's
slash,
literally a Sam Spade. Yeah,
What's the other guy? It's because his name is literally like
it's Sam
Marlowe. So he's a Philip Marlowe, Sam Spade ripoff. A classic. Noir detective office with his name painted on the door.
I know, with briefcase reel-to-reel tape recorders on the wall and all of this shit. And it's like, it's the classic where it's like, did you guys just go on set and Universal to shoot this?
It doesn't make any goddamn sense why it's happening.
And he's like, he's like in a three-piece suit wearing a fedora in... you know, inside in Hugh's office, in Dabney's office, like showing, you know, while
when
they watch.
When he first shows up, you're like, all right, this guy's a little eccentric. Like, I get it. You're a private detective.
We get it. He's leaning into it. And then the next time you see him,
his office,
he's
and he's
worse.
Got the like a Maltese Falcon replica in his window. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. I get what you're doing, but what I don't get is why you're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, did you think we wouldn't understand what a private investigator was unless you frame this? And I mean, I think the answer to that is probably we're not in the demographic they were making this for.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it is worth noting that Peter Falk is the executive producer on a lot of this. So, you know, I'm sure there's some like stuff where it's like, I'll just throw in a classic detective in there. Why not?
I mean, EP just means he's responsible for asking people for money.
That's important.
I mean, that's super dumbed down. But yeah, the long and short of it is executive producer isn't quite.
Yeah, but he's also the I think he's also like
he
a regular producer
star,
and
and
he's also the star. So he probably had a little input on it. But yeah, it just feels like a very old man sort of decision. We also have a very strange but we have an interesting cameo by another
Sorry, Little Richard? Are we talking about Little Richard?
We're talking about Little Richard.
I was surprised you didn't mention him in the opening.
We had Prince music, and now we've got Little Richard, so I feel
like... Yeah, except Little Richard's actually in the fucking episode.
He actually is in this episode. He has
and
dialogue.
And it's kind of amazing, like, bless him for doing this at all, because I was not expecting it, because, like, when... So, Columbo is trying to find the drummer... after he has
Nettie
has literally he jumps out his apartment window
Columbo
shattering
and,
the glass and then
Sergeant
jumps into the pool downstairs.
Sergeant Huback have cornered him at his motel and he just jumps out the window and into the pool and then runs off.
Yes, which is incredible, especially because she pulls a gun. Like, I mean, I understand he's a murder suspect, but also, like, you're gonna just shoot him?
Well, he's
anyway.
Fleeing. She does. I mean, I think that's
no, she doesn't. I know. Yeah. I know. But it is just, it's kind of a funny, it's like, well, that's not gonna get you to him any faster if you pull out your gun and aim at him. I guess if you shoot him in the leg, but anyway, but yeah, so Columbo is, like, trying to chase him down, and so he goes to ostensibly where the guy's employed, which is the aquarium, which is this incredible dive bar.
He knows where he goes to a friend of hers. He finds the name of a friend of Nettie's.
No, it was on. No, no. He literally pulled up a thing that had like from Nettie's apartment or, you know, motel that was like a pay stub that had place of employment
and had
the aquarium on it.
Gotcha.
And so he went to the aquarium talked to...
I don't know where... This is a very small, weird dive bar Is this a real thing? Can we talk about what's going on in this bar?
Yes, please.
Is this a real thing?
Let's talk about this.
Okay.
This one?
Yeah.
No. Hmm. But the conceit, yes.
Yeah.
There's a famous bar, actually. I believe it is in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Is
this like a mermaid bar?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It is like one of the oldest tiki bars in the country. One of the oldest tiki bars, period, as far as that sort of kitschy, sort of imperialist hobby of like collecting, you know, jotch from,
tiki
the South
bar.
Pacific.
We're all familiar.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. Yeah. But so, yes. And this one had a giant aquarium behind the bar and mermaids who would swim in the aquarium.
But they would go into the water, right?
Yes, like, they were actually in the water.
This is women
who would
have mermaid tails, like little prosthetics, and they would go swim down and wave at patrons and swim back up.
Yes, or if you are in the South and you are familiar with Weekiwachi in Florida, you'll know that, you know, there are famous kind of mermaid shows down there.
Mm-hmm.
Similar stuff. Pardon me, I just smacked my desk. Anyway.
Could not hear it even slightly, so that's fine.
Yeah, well, it's probably for the best. It might come out in the recording. We'll see.
Oh, no.
But so... So yeah, I think this is a reference to that bar,
right?
But the nature of how it is staged. No. It's not what's happening at all.
Columbo goes downstairs somehow. Somehow he's downstairs.
He goes downstairs into what definitely looks like a basement, but then when you turn around, there is definitely a green screened in window that looks into the bar.
Looks out to the bar. If you're bar and you look into this aquarium that's behind the bar,
you see this compositing of a woman.
You see a woman in a mermaid outfit. Green screen, flipping around, which apparently is being done live in a back room. This woman just gets, I don't know, first of all, I don't know how she gets up there.
Yeah.
Because there's no one like back there with her. She's just alone. She's suspended from the ceiling. She's doing flips, which, how long does she do that? Because you can't do that for that long. You will, like, you'll pass out eventually.
Well, if you stay upside down, you're going to pass out pretty fast. But it's also the, like, well, you know, she's in, like, a traditional fly harness, you know, so that she can flip upside down and all that.
And but she's not dressed like a mermaid. She's dressed just like a sexy lady. Like, she's just dressed like a lady with a bustier. She doesn't have, like, like a tail.
It's a whole... But, yeah, so I would bet you dollars to donuts that is a question of not... being able to blow the cash on doing that right.
Yeah, probably.
Like, the original was probably written for her to actually be in it, and I think that they did a hasty kind of hack job thing because that was way cheaper than having a tank big enough that they could have someone swimming in it and then have Columbo go talk to that person.
Yeah. We also get... But, they also crazy. Gives us a fun... version of the drunk guy sees something crazy and then looks into his glass like, what am I drinking? Because he sees Columbo in the aquarium.
He sees Columbo in there, and then Columbo and the proprietor / mermaid lady both wave at him, and then we get to see the drunk smile and how many teeth he's lost. but so she basically, Columbo goes in, you know, trying
she
to track
directs
down.
Him onto this other club where it says ask for Little Richard.
Yeah, and which I didn't think anything of, and then we get there, and the first shot is of Little Richard playing music, and I'm like, oh, okay. I don't know why I didn't expect him when she said his name, but I just kind of assumed it was like because Columbo kept saying, oh, I got money for him from. I don't know, Joey No Hair, whatever.
Joey,
I wrote it down. But
Few Hairs, I believe.
Few Hairs. That's
something
it.
Few Hairs,
It's like Johnny Few Hairs or something, you know, as if it's like a bet that, you know, you know, like a race the guy put money on or something. Right. But so
that's it's so weird Little that Richard Little Richard is there. He's like coked to the gills. I think it's very hard to tell with Little Richard. He definitely did a lot of drugs in the 90s, so I would believe it. So
I mean, he just
has that aura around.
He just looks like Little Richard.
Yeah,
like there wasn't anything different in his demeanor from any other time I had seen him.
Right,
you know, on screen. So it's like, how are you supposed to know?
In fairness,
you kind of don't.
I mean, yeah, that's true. But I think his public persona was as a guy who just looked like he did a lot of drugs constantly.
Did a lot of coke all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it works.
It was the 90s, and he did very well by it. it's very weird, and it's just a little fun drop in, and he doesn't come back later. There isn't an amazing climactic moment where he comes in at the very end, which like the boy leading the dog. Like, there isn't like, and do you know this man? And then Debbie Coleman is like, is that fucking Little Richard? Why is he here?
Yeah, no. No, but it's for the best, maybe, that he's just there for that cameo. But that's kind of how a lot of this episode feels to me, is it's like, oh, hey, it's another character actor or somebody from this era of television that I kind of recognize from everything. Which, you know, I realize is more common as we get further away from, you know, an era where I would have been in my infancy or, you know, been way too young to be picking up on any kind of adult cues.
Yeah.
But
I mean, there are little bits I like. I like the investigating part with the lab technician guy, the guy who works for the.
The photo cameras, like the speeding cameras.
Yeah, I like that guy. That's like classic Columbo stuff.
Yeah, that whole scene, like that's the part I guess that's a bit of a bummer. Is it's not until the scene with the DA that we sort of see we see Dabney kind of really crank it up, and in both in the arrogance and in the like, well, I guess you don't have me, like just all of the sort of like kind of bringing his force to bear that I wanted to see more like that consistently through the episode. And it just felt like what they were giving us was a little too subtle for this episode, for this kind of film. 'Cause it is just a little too subtle. It doesn't feel like it has, I mean, like you say, it feels kind of like he phoned it in because his tactic is to pretend like he's not listening to Columbo, but it's like if all that gives us as viewers is a brief moment of maybe him making a face before it cuts to commercial.
Yeah.
I don't know if that counts. I don't know if that's quite enough for what should be, this should be a thing where we really genuinely feel this dude's going to get away with it.
I also think it's crazy. It completely took it out me out of the scene when this photo is introduced, because we have earlier the lawyer, Shira Denise's associate lawyer character. She says that she knew when he asked her, they know that something was up.
To do this research thing.
She just knew. But, okay, so he asked her, in order for this photo to exist, she would have had to have, she's the one in the mask. She can. Right. It can only be her in the mask. There's literally no other person it could be.
Yep.
So she got slightly suspicious when he said to her, take my car, put on this mask of me. Go to Pasadena. Pasadena.
Yeah, it's Pasadena.
And speed through a light.
Yeah, speed through any of these lights that have cameras.
And she was
wearing
like,
this mask of me.
This is slightly suspicious. Like, shit. You're an amazing lawyer.
I was like, you're a criminal defense attorney.
Yeah.
I would have expected you to know better.
Right.
I mean, and of course,
she immediately starts blackmailing him and basically puts him back in the exact same position that he just murdered to get out of.
I mean, that's the part that I did appreciate out of that. Is it's like that. She goes, hey, well, this was kind of, I kind of wondered about this, but it's okay. Now I know what you did. And now I can use it as leverage to get what I want out of you.
And partner, and you'll marry me. Because apparently
then
Dabney
I
Coleman
can't
is
be compelled
hot,
to testify.
He's hot shit. Because all the ladies
I mean, that one would have been a little more believable if it was Robert Culp.
That's true.
You know, if she was like, well, then you're going to fucking marry me. I can wait on that one, but don't wait too long because, you know, they can't force your spouse to testify against you. You know, and it's like I get that, but it is so much funnier when that photo surfaces and we suddenly understand what that quote unquote research project was.
Yeah.
It's like you had to fucking know, and you really shouldn't have gone for the blackmail option because this is one of those things of like, you have no excuse.
Yeah. Yeah.
You definitely knew better, you know,
it's just, and it's that, so like, it's so weird. And that, and also that, like, nobody brings that up. Like, how like, specifically strange it would be to be asked that.
Right, to have someone go. I mean, that's the thing, is you can kind of rationalize it.
They really
if
wanted...
If you really, really tug and be like, well, I could see him asking her to do this because they're looking for any loophole for one of their clients,
right,
as far as
like
alibis or like presentation of them on a like, but not in a like, hey, just wear this mask of me and speed.
Right.
Like that's not.
I think that this is like a good. I mean, the problem is, though, like, I like this as the catch because, like, it's very classic Columbo. This is a classic Columbo catch.
Yeah, they give you everything. It's right there in front of you. It stares you in the face on the screen.
It's a little stupid. And it also probably would not hold up even slightly in court.
Right. But it's a little dumb, but at the same time, like, you can catch it before Columbo tells us if you're really on top of shit. And it is one of those things where it's like, it's even if it's slightly goofy, it's backed up by Columbo like going to extraordinary lengths to verify his suspicion and then using those extraordinary lengths to string up the murderer.
Yeah.
And that's
the good shit. The arrest, freeze frame, which is fun. And then
thank you.
During the credits, we get possibly the weirdest scene in Columbo to date, maybe. I don't know. Definitely in the pantheon.
Well, it's
of weird scenes.
This is one of those things where they're like, it's a weird subplot that doesn't go anywhere.
Columbo is his nephew is a fan of this lady.
He brings it up when he is first at the scene of the crime.
Marcy.
And he is and he's just like, I think she was his favorite singer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he listened to and then he like sings a bar of the tune that they were boning down to.
Right.
And
the
then,
only song that they wrote for this lady. They just had the one.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently so. which is fine. It's better that than they wrote like a whole bunch of songs that, you know, didn't quite sound like the sort of pop stars they were trying to emulate.
Yeah, no, this one was pretty on the mark. This is perfectly acceptable as a television pop song.
But Columbo mentions that. But really, the very first thing he does is he drives in his car and then rolls his window down and proceeds to stick his head out of the window, looking backwards while still driving forwards. To talk to a long-haired a beach guy who is holding a boombox to ask him how much he paid for the boombox. Right. And this is all a subplot about Mrs. Columbo's birthday is coming up and she's been dropping hints about wanting basically, you know, a cassette player.
A boombox. Yeah.
And like he fucking asks Dabney about the one that's at the at the beach house, which is kind of funny.
Right.
But it is this like it is this whole weird subplot and then culminates in Columbo.
It just culminates in Columbo. He's driving.
Having purchased one.
He's driving home, I guess, after the case.
Yeah.
He's driving along the beach and he's listening to this song again.
Mm-hmm. Singing along.
Singing
at
along
least for
with
a
it.
Bar.
And then he looks away from the road for approximately like 20 seconds. Like he's not looking at the road for like the entirety of the end credits. He looks away from the road. He picks up her CD.
Mm-hmm.
He looks at it longingly.
And then puts it back down. Was there a CD player in that? I thought it was a dual deck. Cassette player.
I think it was a CD player. Boombox. It had like a disc on the on it.
All right.
I think it was one of those early
CD players.
But it was
boomboxes. Like with the box and like the dollar signs on it where it was because the so
yeah, it said 40% off like, on the box.
Yeah, like the long haired guy was like it like mentions a place by name. Doty's Discounts is the best.
Yeah.
And this whole thing, and that's supposed to be but it is it's just this weird like
yeah.
It's this weird like through line that doesn't mean anything.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
It doesn't add or subtract anything. It's nothing. It's completely irrelevant.
Okay. No, there is one thing about it.
Okay.
And it's probably not what you're thinking. But this is why I think this is why I am grateful for it. Let me say that.
Okay. Well, right. We've got a long way to go to justify what you're saying right now, but please continue.
I'll really allow it,
counselor. But
yeah, here's why, Mac, because we hear this song and we hear Columbo sing this song, but there's a different song we never hear in this fucking episode. And
that's not true.
This old man.
That's not true.
Is it in here?
That is not
where
true.
The fuck is it?
It's in. He's parking.
Where is
it's
it?
One of the
I
scenes
it.
Where he parks. It's definitely in there.
I hate to tell you, Ben,
but there is
no,
a this old.
But
man.
My point is, he doesn't fucking it, like. It's not.
He does
just
not
peppered through
he
the entire
whistle
thing.
It,
he doesn't whistle it.
But it
he doesn't
is on
like.
The
he sings this instead.
You can't.
And
get
it's
it,
a very brief one. You're right. You're right. I missed it. I missed that. But that's my point, is instead of it being this nonstop fucking motif in the entire episode, it's relegated to Columbo parking a car. Right. And that's a bit of a win.
Yeah. I also liked the scene with the gardener. I actually sort of enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah. The Japanese gardener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This guy, Tad Hirino. Tad Arishi, or no, that's the actor's name. Ando, yeah. Ando Miyake. Tad Hirino, yeah, is the actor who, born in Seattle, actually, just has a lot of experience playing in Hollywood, has played a lot of characters not from Seattle, as you might expect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think it's great. It's like a weird, it's a scene of two like sort of gentle old men being gentle old men at each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And Omiyaki. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where like I was bracing for it when they were like, oh, it's Japanese, you know?
Yeah.
In the like, oh, don't be super racist.
At no point do you hear a gong. It's been worse in the past.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. I would say for the era they were pretty tame.
No, honestly, he just is basically like this sweet old man who doesn't really understand English all that well.
Yeah.
But
who speaks broken English, yeah, but otherwise is, yeah, a very, very much just a gardener.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he gives Columbo the final piece of the puzzle, which is that there are these berries. Are they hawthorn berries? I don't know what they are. I don't
know what kind they are, but it's like the berries that are enclosed in the hard, like, kind
they're
of
a
nut
very
casing.
Specific sort of berry. And apparently, in all of West Hollywood, there's only one street where these berries fall, and
right,
they are
where those trees are.
Yeah,
and at this time of the year is how Columbo puts
to,
it. But.
If they find those berries inside windscreen wiper. Down by the engine where the windshield wipers sort of sit. He finds the berries in there, and they could only have gotten there that time of day, something reasonable doubt.
Yeah. Well, basically it's that, and it's like, oh, and the glove marks on her neck match the glove marks on the seat adjuster in this guy's truck. Yeah. And oh, and this warrant here shows, yeah, because it's that Columbo uses to
I don't
make
know
the
what,
crack about a little mistake.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know what glove marks means. Can I be honest? I'm not entirely clear what that means in the context of, like...
I mean, I will say that I made myself a few notes that essentially came around to those work gloves are suede. Okay. Suede is pretty fibrous. You would certainly leave indicators that
like
you were
smudge.
Using suede gloves,
I guess,
on whatever you were like
I guess
using them on. It's, well, especially inside a house, right? They're for gardening work, so you're gripping tools. They're
But
my
like,
point is so it's fibrous and it's this other stuff. I don't know about the these glove marks matched, but
right, and glove marks,
but
on
I definitely
a, on a neck, like I like that's
on
the
a
part
neck,
where I'm
right.
like I don't know what, like, do you mean that like the seams match up, like I guess maybe that's possible.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That one's I think they did a little hand waving with it, but there is some truth to the fact that if you were using suede and you were rubbing it on stuff the way he was, which is to say generally using it as if it were like sterile gloves, it would leave indicators everywhere that that you had used work gloves, basically, which is why I don't think they spent a lot of time on it, because it is one of those things of like, yeah, no, those are the kind of gloves that certainly would.
Well, they don't spend any time on it. They literally, Columbo mentions it like in the last like 10 seconds of the episode.
Right, which is probably when it got written.
Yeah.
Is in the last
like,
10 seconds.
Oh, God,
of
we need something
meeting.
More. Yeah. We just need a little more because we don't quite have it.
Mention the gloves. The gloves.
The gloves.
Glove
marks.
Print. Yeah,
glove
the
marks
glove
are
print.
A thing
that's,
now.
That's like a fingerprint. Yeah. We got it. We got it.
Why bother wearing gloves then, you know?
Yeah.
Like criminals?
Yeah,
like,
it's,
I don't understand.
It's silly. I did like seeing him dress up as the gardener, though.
Yeah, and I did like...
and then driving
like
a Lexus.
The Sergeant Hugh back with Columbo's mask on, Columbo mask.
Oh, yeah, that
very
was
silly.
That was pretty good. Yeah.
They have a strange flirty energy, Columbo and this sergeant.
I agree.
Yeah.
It is a little, yeah. Yeah, it has, you know what it is? It has that vibe, you know, knowing that there was pressure from network, you know, for him to have like recurring, yeah, you know, sidekick type characters.
You're
like,
not excited. You're not excited by Steve Gilborn as George, the medical examiner.
Steve,
this guy really, yeah, he's great. George, what a character. He comes in, he says two or three lines in a vaguely disinterested
and then he's
tone,
fucking out.
Gets that paycheck, yeah, and then he's out of there.
No, I mean, respect. Like, get it where you can get it. Hey, I just mean it in terms of like, anytime. Yeah, same. I absolutely would. What a great gig.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun to be the medical examiner on the show.
But on a Law and Order, like, come in, you got three lines.
Hell yeah.
You point at an actor lying on a table who's desperately trying not to, you know, breathe.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, but I think that, I think it's just now, anytime there is like an officer,
yeah,
in the force who shows up multiple times in an episode, there's just this part of me that is pre-bracing for like, are they trying to make this a thing?
Yeah, they
tried. And
with
so
the,
there was kind of
that back
element
in the
where
day, last salute to the Commodore. Yeah. They tried to give him those two, those two sidekicks, and yeah.
Oh yeah. Oof, just did not.
There's something else coming up. I don't want to go into it too much, but they definitely.
Yeah.
Like, this is not their last experiment with recurring characters. And,
I knew it couldn't be.
It's going
we're
to
not
get
close
in,
enough
it's
to
going
the
to
end
get
yet.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Was there anything notable about the fashion in this episode? I said that episode, and then you talked for 15 minutes, so.
Yes, I know. You started a timer. I didn't write down everything. There were some bits and bobs. Generally speaking, Daphne is, Daphne is like, well-dressed.
He looks exactly the same in every single thing I've ever seen him in. I feel like he is just standard. Like, he comes out of the house. He came out of the womb dressed like this in a three-piece suit.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is it's like, so there are two sort of horrific clothing moments I will mention. One of them is in the DA's office, and that is what Trish is wearing, the partner, because she's wearing like, like skirt and jacket suit, but the jacket, like, and it's like this sort of brown, and the jacket is like double breasted, but it has these horrific oblong buttons. Mm. And and there's like four of them, and they're not in a good spot, and they're a weird angle, and they're enormous, and it just really, like, once I saw them, I couldn't unsee them, and it was very bad. The other one is during the courtroom scene, after basically they drop it on us that, you know, our villain is, you know, a high-powered, high-profile,
Also, I just want to say...
defense attorney.
They're trying to show that he's, like, the master of the courtroom. And his masterful techniques are coughing too much and also drinking
slowly
water
pouring water
in a very, very, like, weird way.
Yes. Like, his techniques are literally just about sandbagging someone else's monologue.
And then, like, he stands up and is like, look at this guy. Does this guy look like a murderer? He doesn't. I mean, look in his eyes. He doesn't look like a murderer. And then they show the guy, and it's like, that guy looks like a fucking murderer, honestly.
I know. It's like, he goes on about all these things he gave up to take care of his mother. And it's like, yeah, no, he sounds like a murderer.
Yeah, this sounds like what you're describing to me, Dabney Coleman, is a murderer.
Yes, correct. He is definitely a murderer. In that scene, the prosecutor, that suit is a study in why I generally hate the low-buttoning double-breasted jackets.
Hmm.
Because he's wearing a 4x1. So that's four buttons visible and only one buttoned. And that's one of the low buttons. And it's ventless. And when he turns around to Dabney's coughing fit... and makes a comment, you can see that between having no vents and the whole thing and like where it buttons, that all it does is pull against the guy's gut and it just makes it bigger. Like, even though this guy isn't like, I mean, you know, he's not Boss Hogg, right? You know, he's not a very large man.
He's slightly large.
A normal middle-aged guy who has a little bit of a tum. That's normal. There's nothing.
Yeah.
There's nothing on an extreme in tailoring in that. But he's in the worst fucking kind of jacket for having a belly like that. And yeah, and that's why I generally rail against those, is because people mostly look like this guy when they wear them rather than Patrick McGoohan. I mean, of course I was going to mention. But yeah, so Dabney's suits are surprisingly more, I mean, conservative is the appropriate word, but it's like they are less egregious than most suits of this era. So, like, the lapels are an okay size. Mm-hmm. I personally think they're sort of lifeless and flat. Like, you'll see on some, and this is a taste thing, but, like, on some jackets, lapels are sort of flattened to the jacket when they're pressed back or when they are rolled back. And on others, there's a tremendous amount of care taken to shape the lapel so that there is kind of this organic feeling curvature to how it rolls out. And I personally think that that is beautiful. And I prefer that, but that's a personal taste. Like, the other one is arguably sharper, but he also has like really structured, hard padded shoulders, and then his jackets are ventless, and you know, but the jackets are matched to the trousers, so like the trousers are a little higher waisted, but they're also properly pleated in a way that is appropriate, rather than like, hey, I'm wearing this hanging off my hips and it's got triple pleats, also the pants are pooling around my ankles because I don't know what a fucking break is. And he's nowhere near any of that stuff, which is kind of great. It helps really elevate him as sort of this, you know, professional who is always in a suit and is kind of used to, like, there's no other big sort of call outs because, you know, anytime he's wearing a suit, he's generally wearing a clean white shirt under it that is unremarkable, and then like a red tie that
boring.
Might have a pattern.
He's boring.
But it's like, that's your classic power
look
suit
at
structure.
Any picture of Dabney Coleman in anything that he's been in, and he looks exactly like he does in every single scene in the Columbo.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're not going to disguise what that guy looks like. And that's not a guy who gets roles by showing up in a t-shirt and shorts, you know?
No, I mean, this is literal. When you talk about typecasting, there's the negative connotation to it. But then also there's Dabney Coleman, who was cast to be this guy in everything that he appeared in from the early 80s through the late 90s.
Yeah. And for the most part, crushed it in those roles.
And did amazing. And did very well by himself. And is still acting today, you know, and is still appearing in stuff. He's very old now. And he definitely looks like a man who is now, you know, 40, you know, 30 years older than he was in this, but he's still out there. He's still working on it. Good for you, Dabney. Keep it in there. Good for you. Keeping the name Dabney, which certainly when you decided to go into acting, there had to have been the temptation to change that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as a fellow weird name, I appreciate that.
Yeah. You got to run with it.
Exactly.
But yeah, exactly. I mean, that's
can be a Benjamin, you know.
That's kind of it. That's an extremely,
No.
Anyway,
so you got a good name. I like your name, Ben. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to bring you into this.
Whatever.
God, that's a great energy to go out on. I would say you watch this or don't watch this episode. It doesn't matter to me.
I think it's an interesting case study. I don't think it's unwatchable. It's not like the fake Playboy Mansion one where I just was yelling at the screen the entire time.
It's just a real so what. from me.
It's yeah, well, that's just fair. Yeah. I mean, you've watched a lot of Columbo.
I mean, we all have. Listen.
Yeah. Well, we definitely have.
Yeah.
But like again, I think this is one of those things of.
At this point, I've only watched slightly more Columbo than you, so.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean. I don't know. This is one of those where it's like, I look at it and instead I sort of see, I see the like, this was really close to kind of being an incredible episode, but I think it just, it didn't really deliver on the promise of, oh, this dude knows the ins and outs of murder cases. He is really gonna.
Yeah.
And I think they tried a little bit as far as like whatever his plot stuff was, but it just felt like. Yeah, and that's tough, right? Like, I don't know how you would write that.
I guess, but
shape it up into more of a sort of
I didn't
tit
have
for tat back and forth.
I didn't get to watch the episode that they would that they wanted to make. I had to watch the episode
watch
that
the
they
episode
did
they
make.
Did make, of yeah. course. I mean, that's always
not,
how
which
it
was
is.
Boring like, and not that interesting to me.
I totally understand. There are plenty.
The episode you are proposing that which is a good episode. You know, I would say watch that one. If you have the ability to watch the theoretical episode that Ben is proposing, then I would say watch that one instead of this one.
Right. But lacking access to that episode, like we all do, because that episode doesn't exist in my brain.
No.
I just see that this was close to being great, but didn't quite
get there. I
would
say jump into the quantum universe where this is a good episode and then watch that episode. But otherwise, you can skip it.
Yeah.
that's where I'm at on this one.
Yeah. That's fair.
So that
yeah, I'm done. I don't got anything.
Do it for this one. Also, first of all, here's the thing. I was looking for a quote to go out on as the one more thing. Columbo.
You don't want to just play a riff of the music?
No, sorry. I mean, I might. Who knows what happens in the edit? It's crazy. So Columbo says in this episode, in the quotes, according to this quotes page, you know, in all the years I've had this car, this is the first time I've ever had the top down.
Yes.
That's a lie.
Yes, it is.
Say that? That's not true.
No. Yeah. But it's just because they were taking the top down for the scene, and that sounds funny.
It is a funny scene and line, but it's also not remotely true.
Yeah.
We've seen
it's not the first
we've
time
seen
that
thing with
down.
The top down several times.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, he forgot. And maybe Peter Falk also forgot.
Who knows?
Clearly the folks writing it at this point.
Levison and Link are just gone. They're not even involved at this point.
No, at this point, they were probably not getting the royalties from Universal that they were supposed to.
They were out there angrily preparing their lawsuit.
Right. Well, actually, no, they were busy with Murder, She Wrote, probably.
Yeah, that's true. And now one of them is dead. Which one? Who can say? There's literally no way to know. So that's going to do it for this week. This has been Columboys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing.
Yeah?
You think I'd look good with a mustache?
Yeah, bring up that Dabney business.
It's time to put a little Dabney in my... A little dab of Dabney, I think, could do me a lot of good.
Yeah, a little dab of Dabney on your on your lip there.
They say a little dab will do you.
Ugh.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.